liking to strange characters, but they tape these sessions, and so I have to tell them when we're ready to go. Okay. And I have to explain that my name is Maria Hamlin Zuniga, and the session this evening is going to be about 500 years, health, and the Latin American identity. First of all, let me explain who I am. I was born in Minnesota, and I have lived for the past 25 years in Central America, mostly in Nicaragua, but I've worked all over the region. And I have been now 2 weeks here in Holden. This is my last week. One of the things that I wanted to do while I was at Holden was to be able to share with people perhaps a different ideas about what this year, 1992, means. Some of you have been in my sessions before. You know I try to make them participative. So, this is 1992. And what is it that some people are celebrating this year?
The quincentennial.
The?
Quincentennial.
Uh-huh. And what does that mean? Of what?
Columbus landing on this
planet. Columbus landing here. Anything else?
The supposed discovery.
Discovery. Okay. And it's precisely this word, discovery, that's getting quite a bit of attention, isn't it?
Yes.
Are any of you teachers?
Was.
Uh-huh. We have a few teachers. Why don't you come and sit in the front row? Don't sit in back.
Oh, yeah?
Is that what you do in church, too?
Yes.
Second pew.
Okay, well, some of you, the teachers, perhaps are doing something on this theme in school. Is that true or no? Anybody doing anything on this discovery theme? No, nobody. Well, we want to do something here. But what we want to do is talk about it not just in terms of discovery. Who discovered what? Who actually discovered what? Any ideas? Feel free to speak up. I want you to talk.
Some people call it the invasion.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
They do.
Part of the problem was whether the world was flat or round, so they discovered that it was round.
They discovered that it was round. Who did?
The people who came back. I mean, you know, they made it.
Magellan did.
Yeah.
Big pardon?
Magellan did.
Well, eventually they did discover that it was round. Columbus was searching for a new route to be in to India. Looking for what?
Spices.
Is that all he was looking for?
New route.
He was looking for a new route to the Indies. And what was Spain? What was Spain at that time?
It was a leading nation, I think, of the area out there, wasn't it?
It was the what, pardon me?
One of the leading nations at the time, of the European nations.
Yes, it had an empire, and it was building its empire. And we know what empires are, don't we? Maybe you don't. In any case, Spain was looking to expand its empire. It wasn't just looking for spices. It wasn't just looking for a new room. It was looking for ways to increase its wealth and power. Now, power at this time in the world that we're talking about, 1492, power was pretty equivalent to having gold. And I'm not going to go into all that happened during those first years, because in the other room, there are some papers that you can read about discovery versus conquest, discovery versus invasion. And perhaps later on in the week we'll get more into it. But in any case, what happened is the people, Columbus and those sailors, arrived here, and they claimed this land as their own, without any consideration of the people who were already living here. So that's why I say, who discovered whom? Columbus discovered a new route. He discovered new lands for, according to his point of view, but there were already people here. And what they discovered is that those people coming across the seas were not, in most cases, their friend. Because what empire means is using that power to take out wealth. And a great deal of wealth was taken out. But what we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm going to involve you in this process, is a little bit about what was it that really was brought and what was taken. And we'll examine that a little bit, but by having some readings, and I would like you all, I would like some volunteers to help me. We're going to read, very short, they're not exactly stories, they're testimonies from different times. One of them is called this was The Monk's Say. Now, I would like you to listen carefully because we're going to break up in small groups and we're going to try to discuss what these different voices mean to us and what they're saying to us. Okay? Got it?
Yeah.
Entonces,
excuse me.
Speaking Spanish. I need 5 volunteers. Would you like to sit up here? Here's 1, 2, 3. Come and sit up here. Bring your chairs around so you're facing the group. I need 2 more. All you have to do is read. Okay? 1 more?
I'll read.
Okay. Bring your chair. Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead and use that. Now, try to listen carefully and get the gist of the different stories. You're going to read this one, The Monk Says.
Okay. All the way to the end, right?
Yes, it's the short.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. The Monk Says, she came to Mexico 20 years ago. 2 doves guided her to Guanajuato. She arrived without a scratch, although she crossed the sea and the desert, and those who carried her lost their way. The king sent her to us in gratitude for the wealth that never stops spurting from the bowels of these mountains. For more than 8 centuries, she had lived in Spain. Hidden from the Moors, she survived in a cave in Granada. When Christians discovered and rescued her, they found no wound on her wooden body. She reached Guanajuato intact. She remains intact, performing miracles. Our Lady of Guanajuato consoles both poor and rich for their poverty, and she shields alike from the cold those who sleep outdoors and in a sheltered palace. In her infinite mercy, she does not distinguish between servants and lords. No one invokes her and fails to receive divine favor. By her grace, many Indians of Guanajuato who go to her with repentance and faith are now being saved. She has stayed the sword of the Lord, who with just fury castigates the idolatries and sins of the Indians in Mexico. The afflicted who brought their supplications to her and paid due charity have not been touched by the pestilence. In other areas, the Indian whom typhus does not kill dies of hunger or hardship. There are corpses in the fields and in the plazas. There are houses filled with them in which all died, and no one remained to tell of it. Throughout Mexico, the pestilence is raising such a stink of putrefaction and smoke that we Spaniards have to go about holding our noses.
Now, Martha, I'm going to read on page 24.
What color is a leper's skin? The lamp advances, violating the darkness, and pulls faces out of the murk, faces of specters, hands of specters, and nails them to the wall. The official touches nothing, his gloved hands hidden beneath his cape, half closing his eyes as if fearing to infect them. He has come to check the implementation of the new order concerning San Lazaro Hospital. The Viceroy has ordered that male patients should not mix. Whites and mestizos have to occupy one room, blacks and mulattoes another, Indians another. The females, however, are all to be together in one room, whatever their color or condition.
The pestilence. Influenza does not shine like the steel sword, but no Indian can dodge it. Tetanus and typhus kill more people than 1,000 greyhounds with fiery eyes and foaming jaws. The smallpox attacks in secret, and the gun with a loud bang amid clouds of sparks and sulfurous smoke. But smallpox annihilates, can't talk today, more Indians than all the guns. The winds of pestilence are devastating these regions. Anyone they strike, they blow down. They devour the body, eat the eyes, close the throat, all smells of decay. Meanwhile, a mysterious voice ranges over Peru. It treads on the heels of the pestilence and penetrates the litanies of the dying. This voice that whispers from one ear to another, whoever throws the crucifix out of his house will return from the dead.
Page 237.
Page 254, Oaxaca. Medicine and witchcraft. The Zapotec Indians, who before falling to earth were brightly colored songbirds, told a few secrets to Gonzalo de Balsalobre. After living among them for a time, and after investigating the mysteries of religion and medicine, Don Gonzalo is writing in Oaxaca a detailed report that he will send to Mexico City. The report denounces the Indians to the Holy Inquisition and asks for punishment of the quackeries that monks and ordinary justice have been unable to suppress. A while back, Alarcón left the university to share for 9 years the life of the Coixco Indian community. He got to know the sacred herbs that cure the sick, and later he denounced the Indians for devilish practices. In the first period of the conquest, however, indigenous medicine aroused great curiosity in Europe, and marvels were attributed to America's plants. Fray Bernardino de Sahagún collected and published the wisdom of 8 Aztec doctors, and King Philip II sent his personal physician, Francisco Hernandez, to Mexico to make a thorough study of native medicine. For the Indians, herbs speak, have sex, and cure. It is little plants, aided by the human word, that pull sickness from the body, reveal mysteries, straighten out destinies, and provoke love or forgetfulness. These voices of earth sound like voices of hell to 17th century Spain, busy with inquisitions and exorcisms, which relies for cures on the magic of prayer, conjurations, and talismans for even more than on syrups, purges, and bleedings.
Okay, 272.
Okay.
Song of the New Mexican Indians to the portrait that escapes from the sand. So I might cure myself, the wizard painted, in the desert your portrait. Your eyes are of golden sand, of red sand now your mouth, of blue sand your hair, and my tears are of white sand. All day he painted. You grew like a goddess on the immensity of the yellow canvas. The wind of the night will scatter your shadow and the colors of your shadow. By ancient law, nothing will remain for me, nothing except the rest of my tears and silver sands.
Okay. Some of you might ask, where do these stories or these short excerpts or what I like to call voices come from? These are documents, different historical documents. They're stories, they're poetry, they're collections of different kinds. In this book, there are about 227 different sources for these stories that we find just in this one book. This is part of a trilogy that's about Latin America. And so what I'd like us to do now is to go into little groups, and we're going to discuss a little bit about what you heard and what you felt when you heard what was being read here. And then I want to know, what does this signify for us today in our understanding of 500 years? Okay? First of all, what did you feel and what did you think about what has been read? And secondly, what does it mean for us today? Okay, can we have groups of about 5 people? Just make them anywhere you want to make them. Okay, now, who would like to share what their group felt? What some of the feelings about the stories or the testimonies were in your group? Anybody? Just feel free to speak up. Any group?
I'm not sure. Okay. We were a real conservative group, I think. We tried to look at it rationally and from all perspectives, but I think the basic conclusion was that really nothing's changed over the centuries. And that, you know, from the stories, what we were getting was that, you know, here were a bunch of people doing something. I'm going to paraphrase what we said, so I say something that people in the group disagree with, stop me. But, you know, these people were doing what the Spaniards were doing what they felt was right, and they were kind of obeying their leaders and obeying their government and doing the culturally correct things of the time. And, you know, we found a lot of applications in our society today where we're doing the culturally correct things that are probably leading us to disasters every bit as bad as what took place in Central America, Mexico, Latin America, wherever. And you can see the same kinds of things took place in Africa. You know, the same kinds of things you're taking. We pointed out some equally bad things that are taking place today in this country and others. Kind of based on greed and exploitation and thinking that those who are different are less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? It's just one group.
Wow.
We felt that, again, that nothing had changed over the years, that the Spaniards marched into Mexico and African territory and raped the country.
Yeah.
And that they should, that we're doing that, we got into our own situation these days. That we're in having those problems. Like, for instance, we mentioned that in a jail house. You go to a jail and you notice that 3/4 of the inmates are black and 1/4 is white. There's something wrong with that kind of a system where those people have to go to that kind of a way to make a living. So
Mm-hmm. And also probably that more black criminals are jailed than white criminals. Whites have less chance to get up. You know, more of the maybe blacks that are arrested end up in jail than the whites too.
That's what we're saying. There's something wrong with the system.
Just
there
the
should
system.
Be some sort of an opportunity for those people to make a different change in their life.
Mm-hmm. And I'm saying some of the white people that may rely on crime don't end up in jail.
So. Another group?
Well, just a corollary to that, I just read the other day that percentage is changing, and more whites as a percentage are going to jail these days than in the past. It's drugs and it's a lot of it's drugs.
Yeah, a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another group?
I think that we felt dismay and a number of other emotions also as we reflected on the readings that we heard. We went several different directions in reflecting on what we heard. And looking back on it, if nothing else, I think we were left with a lot of questions. They were troubling readings as we tried to answer the question of what's the significance for today. We didn't really have any, we couldn't sew it up.
We did one also about that. We thought that if everybody would treat each other with a great deal of respect, that it would solve an awful lot of problems. Even a naive suggestion. Mm-hmm. Listen to each other.
The thought, this is just a personal one that came to me, is whether the Spaniards coming to Central America were less hypocritical, whether they were just coming to get the gold and get what they could, and they weren't really coming in the sense of befriending the population, whereas our actions, for instance, in Desert Storm were a saving, it seemed somewhat hypocritical. We were going there to preserve the oil. I wonder if in the Spaniards' perspective, they were clearer about what they were coming to get.
I don't think so. We talked about the ties between the conquerors and the church people that came, and how that all got, and then how that connected with the health issues, because for the indigenous people, health had so much to do with their religious beliefs, like a lot of folks said. And the religious people supposedly did come to convert these people because they were pagan, but also, and so maybe it looked altruistic on the surface, but it was all along the same lines of getting them to be submissive, to take the wealth and the gold. Although I don't know if those religious people were, how conscious they were of, you know, their being accomplices and, you know, just what their mindset was. I don't know how much they walked in and said, "We want your gold." Now, I get a lot more of the impression of, we want to save you, we want to convert you, we want to. I wasn't there.
Columbus crew, didn't they? Columbus crew weren't in a hurry to save. They were in a hurry to find the shortcut to get the gold. They didn't care what diseases they brought with them, nor how to cure the diseases that they brought. And I don't think they had any, took prisoners or took healthy folks into slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did.
Yes, I mean they weren't. They did great missionary zeal men that came over with Columbus, at least.
They were criminals.
Yeah,
sort of the same as we brought to Georgia.
Are there some other feelings that came out in your group?
I can't help but keep thinking the basic difference between religion and a true faith, and that some of the most horrible atrocities have been done in the name of, quote, religion. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of what I heard about Haiti, was that so many people were so terribly treated by the missionaries that they renounced the God of Christianity and they made a choice to worship the God of darkness. Mm-hmm. And now their country demonstrates that. They had it with the quote cloud of light.
You weren't here for the reading, perhaps, but that was a theme that came up here as well. Yeah.
And to examine our own motives. So often Christ or Jesus has been a tool to put in the bag to have a prosperous life, which is religion and not faith. And I had to find out in myself. It was quite shocking. Because we've so westernized our faith.
But that fits so nicely in our own colonial with the Protestant work ethic and capitalism that it just fit like a hand in glove in our own culture.
Yeah, I think we burned a lot of people at the stake who had faith. I think we think we did it to ourselves in our own
witches. Yeah. Along those lines, I was reading in a bus station in Bolivia that when the Indians in Bolivia had their devil, and when the Spaniards came over and started the mining and enslaving them into working in the mines, they had to come up with a new hell. Because their reality was worse than the hell that they had in their religion.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh. And thousands of people died in those mines in Bolivia. They died because they were forced to work day and night taking the gold and silver out of the mines. And people who work in mines we're not talking about mines where there are occupational health and safety regulations, right? So they were forced to work and their lungs became infected with different kinds of diseases and they died very early on. And this happened in many mines from the north to the south of the Americas.
There's a new thing happening in our country which really shocks. I've used herbs for about 15 years and there's now a great thing happening with the medical powers that be, and one of the most well-known naturopaths, Dr. Wright, who wrote for Prevention Magazine, he's an MD and an AD. They did a raid, the Federal Drug Administration did a raid on his clinic a few months ago, and it was just unreal. So it's like if you do something creative and different, now it's like science is our religion, now, and it's becoming a threat to...
that's kind of on the lines of what they were saying about things that happened 500 years ago, we still could have.
Yeah.
We talked about that too, how anything with health that's involved in beliefs or just something more like that, herbal that's not science is suspect or just plain wrong.
Well,
I got another point about yesterday and today. Yeah, I believe. Like you were saying, that they made these people work all hours of the day and destroyed the health of the miners in Bolivia. Well, I think one of the things that have crept into our culture that's destroyed health, family, and everything have been the hours of business that we, as capitalists, associate greatly. You got to have the store open from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Or if you work in 7-Eleven all night long. We had exactly the same kinds of things happen in this nation and our culture won't recognize it. But I guess we just, I feel it more because like my daughter just got married and she and her husband never see each other because she works in the day and he starts working like at 5 or 6 at night. And then when you see something like that, life is not fun that way. When we look back at our lives and think, gosh, we always worked at the same time. We had a lot of advantages that our children don't have today because our society has progressed. I can bring this in front of a normal group of people, if I say this, they usually start throwing things at me. I don't trust you people. Some of you might agree. A few of you might agree with me.
Oh, these aren't going to people who come to hold them. Well, I've got to try to wrap this up. So, this is one of the problems of teaching here. If we try to do in an hour what we need several days to work on. But basically,
what I wanted to have happen is that you begin to think about what really happened, and I heard somebody say how history is revised periodically. It's not that we want to revise history, we want people to dig deeper into what is the real story behind so many things that happened. We're just talking right now about the 500 years, no? We could talk about many other things. This is just one point in time, and we're using it this year because this is the year that there are all these celebrations going on. And the feeling that many people in Latin America have, many, many people, not just in Latin America either, but people of the Americas, you know, and people who are in marginal situations are saying, maybe we should take another look at what really happened, and maybe we shouldn't be celebrating what happened, but we should be commemorating. And the Lutheran Church put out a statement about the celebration of the 500 years and said that this should be a year of repentance. No? A year of repentance. And I don't think I have it down here, but I do have the statement. And if some of you are interested, I'll be sure and have it available on Monday. I can put it up with those other things I have in the other room. And I really suggest that if you're interested in this debate, you take a look at what's over there. Because later on in some of my sessions, we'll be getting into some of this. But there are some really good points that have been brought out here. Nothing has changed. Well, there's been all of this development in the world, and in spite of all this development, development in the world, people are still exploiting other people. People are still greedy, and power plays are involved in a lot of this. Something was said about culturally correct responses. Well, those people were hired to come over here and be the conquerors, be soldiers, soldiers for the king on one hand, and soldiers for the Lord on the other hand. Now, some of those soldiers for the king and for the Lord saw what was going on. They realized that there was something important and something to be respected in this culture. And those people that made those kinds of decisions were rejected, on the most part, by the Spanish crown. But some of them were very brave and wrote, and some of these writings come from those people, their historical documents. Another important thing is that, as somebody pointed out, we tend to think that Western medicine, whatever that is, no, has all the answers. The medical establishment is very well established. And so when people are using other ways of curing, those are looked upon as not being correct. And you use the example of today, the importance of herbal medicines. Those of us who are working in Central America and in other places in Latin America feel that it's really a shame that all of those valuable plants that people used were said to be not effective. Because if you look at what's happening in pharmaceutical companies are buying up and growing those plants to take the products out of those plants, the chemicals that are in those plants, to make modern medicine today. No? And for example, in Mexico, there are huge areas where herbal medicines are grown, particularly for the drug companies, so that they can then sell them in different forms, no? And use them in the formulation of different medicines. In the Far East, in China and Japan, there are alternatives to our Western medical system with the use of herbal medicines, with the use of acupuncture. Western medicine tends to look down upon these things. We'll get into this later on this week, but there's a reason why. There's a reason why, because if you look at what our medical establishment is, it's a very big business and it has lots of money involved in it. And when people start learning alternatives that are simple, that they can apply themselves, naturally they're going to say these aren't effective. And that's what people were saying to the Indians, no?
And in the later stories, we saw the song of the New Mexican Indian, the curing. No, when I did my field work for my master's degree, I worked with Pueblo Indians and with the Navajo Indians. And those medicine men, those curers, came in to the service, to the Indian health services, and worked with the Western medical doctors together on some special kinds of cases. Tuberculosis may be a case, maybe a disease that some people think only can be treated by using Western medicine, by using antibiotics. But there in the Indian Health Service, people were making use of both the traditional cure and Western medicine. Because what we've taken out of Western medicine is that spiritual part of it, that relationship of our spirit to our body and our wholeness. And we're talking about wholeness here in Holden these weeks, in our idea of the whole new world. And the whole new world begins with each individual and their wholeness. You know? And so there were many things, there were many cultural attributes of the Indian people of the Americas that were not recognized, and we continue to not recognize them. And so it's really very true that nothing has changed. But can we change it? Are there things that we can do? I think that there are. And so if you want to take a look at that statement of the Lutheran Church and of those other things that I have on the wall, maybe if some of you continue to come back to some of our sessions, we can discuss this a little bit further. But I think what we really have to do, we really have to recognize that a lot of our history has been presented to us in ways that they, whoever they are, want us to believe things happen. Well, they are the establishments of different kinds. But we have to be courageous enough to ask the questions about what really happened and what can we do to change the situations that of greed and injustice. And that begins with each one of us in our daily lives in our communities, and our communities as part of the greater world. Are there any questions? Yes?
I was just going to suggest that you tell the name of the author of the book that we use in the title in case people want to look at the trilogy.
Yes, there's a trilogy, and it was done by Eduardo Galeano. He's an Uruguayan writer who lived for many years in exile from his country. And what he's done in his trilogy is collect these different voices or testimonies of people from pre-Columbian times to almost the present time, till the 80s. There are three different books, and if somebody's really interested, I didn't ask that they have this in the bookstore, I'm sorry, but there are a number of references, and I would be glad to make them known to you. There is a book in the bookstore about journeys. Do you remember the name of it? I'll also put that up in the other room. But it's a book about the gospel and different journeys and studying the whole meaning of the gospel in light of 500 years of conquest and resistance. Okay. So I'll try to leave these bibliographic references for you in case anybody's interested. The other thing that I'd like you to know is that there is a resource center here in this building right across the hall. And in that resource center, there are a number of materials available for people to look at and write down where you can get them from. They give teachers, for example, ideas of what they can do in the school, church people ideas of what they can do in their different groups in the church. So be sure while you're here to make use of the resource center. Okay. Anything else? Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.